Award-winning biographer Brian J. Jones spent nearly two decades as a public policy analyst and speechwriter before turning to biography full-time in 2007. He presently serves as Vice President of Biographers International Organization. Brian's first book, Washington Irving, an American Original, was hailed as the definitive biography of American literature's first popular author and pop culture icon. The Associated Press praised the book as authoritative, and the Washington Post called it engaging, clearly written, and well-researched. Executive producer Derek Hewitt caught up with Brian at the Miami Book Fair and discussed his new title, Jim Henson, The Biography.
Hi, Brian, and thanks for joining us on The Book Report.
No, it's my pleasure. Thanks.
You've written a great biography on Washington Irving, and now you've just published Jim Henson, the biography. How did you come to choose Jim Henson?
I chose Jim, he sort of found me, but I'm sort of the perfect age for Jim because I would say I'm Muppet Generation 1.0. I was 2 when Sesame Street came out, so I was the target audience at that point. I was 9 when The Muppet Show debuted. I saw The Muppet Movie in the theater when I was 13. I saw The Dark Crystal in the theater. I saw Labyrinth in college in the theater. So Jim was one of those guys I grew up with. I was sort of the first generation that we didn't have to wait for him. He was always there. But I was also this kind of kid that read all the credits. So even as a kid, I would do through TV Guide. I knew people did this. I knew the Muppets weren't moving with a life of their own. Even as a little kid, I got that. I knew there was a Jim Henson, a Frank Oz, a Richard Hunt. And there was a great book that came out in about 1981 called Of Muppets and Men, all about the making of the Muppet Show, that I read till the cover almost fell off of it. But there hadn't been anything ever done on him. It's all about the work, and rightly so. But in 2008, after I'd finished the Irving book, I sort of stumbled upon, I had been reading about Jim and found out there hadn't been a biography, and went to the family. You know, for a lot of people, Jim's death is still fresh. And I think the family, when I finally said, you know, it's almost, at that time it had been 18 years, I think that was a tough number for them to finally realize. You know, it's probably time to do this, because his head writer, Jerry Joel, had recently died, and his agent, Bernie Brillstein, had recently died. You know, so I keep saying, you know, we've got sort of a ticking clock working against us now. It's time to get these people on the record. And thank God we did, because Jerry Nelson, who did The Count and so many other characters, died earlier this year. His widow, Jane, died earlier this year. So, you know, we got a lot of these people on the record finally.
Throughout the book, two words struck me continuously about Jim Henson: genius and nice guy. And it seems that no matter what struggles he went through with Disney or his marriage, he's just about the most upbeat genius I ever heard of. Tell us what you think made him that way.
Yeah, initially I had proposed calling this book Ridiculous Optimism, because that was a quote of Jim's. He always said that he had this ridiculous optimism and it always worked out okay for him. Because that really was the way Jim was. That's the way he thought. It's the way he believed, that things would work out okay, that life was worth living, that life was fun, that things had to matter, that he wanted to make a difference. You know, I think part of it was Jim had an older brother who died when Jim was 19 years old, an older brother. And I think that, Lisa Henson speculated that she called it rocket fuel in his veins at that point, that he kind of knew that, you know, time wasn't something you could just think very casually about. You had to take it seriously and understand you had an obligation and you had to do things. But more than anything, I mean, Jim was almost, I call it pathologically conflict averse. I mean, he didn't, you know, even when he's not getting along with his wife, he won't argue with her, which just makes her even angrier. He can't fire his employees. You know, that's too hard for him. And his producer said, you have to stop calling this family. You can't fire family. You know, but Jim, you know, the cynics need to watch out. Jim really is kind of what you think he is. He is a nice guy. He is a good guy. And you can't do what Jim did, I think, without being genuinely nice, without being genuinely caring. I mean, there's a reason the Muppets work, and it's because Jim works, and Jim, the people around him work. You know, they're a family, and at the end of the day, they're going crazy. They all come back together.
You know, I was struck all the way through the book as well by how deeply influential the Muppets were. Until you find it all in one place, you don't realize what an incredible influence there is across the board. For example, you mentioned in the book that The Muppet Show was the biggest TV show in the world for a time. How long did that last?
The Muppet Show lasted, I'm going to say, only 5 years, and it probably would have gone on longer, but typical of Jim, he said, you know what, that's a really nice show, and he took it off the air. So we could go off and do movies and do, you know, Dark Crystal and things like that. Jim always had that ability to walk away even from the biggest show in the world. You know, what's really fun and really interesting, especially as an American audience, is The Muppet Show was filmed in London from day one, and the Londoners got it immediately. They went crazy for it, and Jim was just stunned by this. He kept calling it Muppet Mania. It took a little time to catch on over here. It's probably a show that if you tried it nowadays, it would go off the air, because back then they were at least willing to give things a little room to breathe. But it took a little time to catch on over here. But man, in London, boy, they got it right away. He had to take the sign off the side of their transport bus that said The Muppet Show, because it would get mobbed at traffic lights.
His kids worked very closely with him. I think it was Lisa who said, if you want to get time with Dad, you have to actually work with him.
Right.
How involved were they with you in the writing of the biography?
Very. I spoke with all five of the kids. He's got three girls and two boys. Three women and two men now, I should say. And, you know, Lisa, the oldest. They were born in 60, 61, 63, 65, 70. So there's five of them in the span of 10 years. They're all still very active either in the company or as performers.
It shows some of Jim Henson's savvy that it was not only a great and continuous creator, but a very effective businessman. He negotiated the very first HBO original series, and with that began an amazing tradition. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I would say without the Fraggles, there are no Sopranos. There is no Game of Thrones. Fraggle Rock was HBO's first original series. You know, his agent Bernie Brillstein and Jim were shopping that around, and HBO made him a great offer, gave him a lot of creative freedom, and that was enough. So they sold that to HBO. It was the first HBO original series. And it's another one of the shows. It was on the air 5 years, and Jim said, that's enough. It was a nice show, and took it off the air. But what really makes Fraggle Rock work is, again, it's Jim's ethic is behind that. It was one of the few shows Jim doesn't actually perform in, but it's his underlying sort of ethos defining it. He went to his writing team day one when they were putting it together and said, sort of tongue-in-cheek, but somebody said, you know, there's no cynicism about Jim, only he could say this with a straight face. He said, let's do a show that'll stop war. And that's Fraggle Rock. It's three different species living together, whether they mean to or not. And that's why Fraggle Rock works, and that's what it's about, and that's Jim's thought process.
Elaine has another question for Brian, so Elaine, spill it out.
Miss Piggy, her path to superstardom, I have the T-shirt, I have the coffee mugs, I had the calendar. Talk about that.
Yeah, Piggy is one of those true Hollywood stories that, you know, actually really did happen. You know, she was almost discovered in the drugstore. She was a back row puppet that they had used. It didn't even really have a regular puppeteer assigned to her. She was, you know, just sort of in the peanut gallery. Frank Oz's character on The Muppet Show was supposed to be Fozzie Bear. And Piggy had been used in an earlier Muppet special, but again, passed back and forth. Richard Hunt performed her, Frank Oz performed. If you watch the early seasons of The Muppet Show, the first couple of shows, her voice is even different a few times. They didn't quite know what to do with her, but again, she wasn't supposed to be the big star. Finally, Frank Oz had her, and what happened is there was a direction on the page that said Miss Piggy had to slap Kermit. And Frank Oz read that and decided it was a karate chop instead. So when she was supposed to slap Kermit, he unloaded with this massive karate chop, and head writer Jerry Jewell said, the place went crazy. You knew you had to see it again. They knew they had it. They knew that was it right there. And at that point, there was no turning back. That became Frank Oz's main character. So poor Fozzie kind of goes to the background at that point, and Piggy became Frank's main character.
She was one of the original ladies with attitude. And I think what she showed to all of us girls back in the day was, you know, you didn't have to be a size 4 to be coveted by so many.
Yeah, and that character is so believable and so real. There's a great story about a magazine wanted to do a magazine shoot with Miss Piggy running on the beach, and, you know, all about the plus size. And so they called up the Muppet Workshop, and they said, we want to bring Piggy out, and we want to film her on the beach and running on the beach. And the Muppet Workshop saying, okay, we'll need to go out there and dig a trench. So, and they were saying, what do you need to dig a trench for? They're saying, well, so the puppeteers can go. And they were stunned that Miss Piggy wasn't doing this herself. I mean, it's that convincing an effect. That's how good they are. And, you know, a lot of people, too, were stunned that it was a man doing Miss Piggy. There's a great story where Spike Milligan was appearing on The Muppet Show, and when they were doing the day one read-through in character voice, Frank Oz starts doing Miss Piggy, and Spike Milligan stands up and points, and he says, it's a man! He could not believe it was a man.
Listeners, Jim Henson, the biography, is a valuable record of an amazing life and also an exciting and fun read. So pick it up at bookstores. Thanks very much for joining us, Brian.
Oh, thank you. This was great.